Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, June 21st, 2018. President Kiir and Riek Machar break bread, hug, and talk to each other in Addis Ababa.
They shook hands, they took pictures, and they took dinner together. And he asked the two leaders to bring a proposal of one case on how they can bring peace to South Sudan.
And Mercy Corps urges the two leaders to end the suffering in South Sudan.
In South Sudan, tens of thousands of people have been killed and millions have been forced to flee, making it the source of Africa's largest refugee crisis.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar continue to negotiate the terms of a deal to restore peace and stability in South Sudan. The two leaders met face-to-face last night for the first time in 2 years in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. A rebel official says the meeting centered on building confidence and trust among the warring parties. Waki Simon-Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
SPLMI or deputy spokesperson Manoa Peter Gatkwos says the two leaders met last night at the official residence of Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed Ali. Gatkwos says Prime Minister Abiy, who chaired the meeting, told Kiir and Machar to work together to bring peace back to their country. Gatkwos says Premier Abiy also told the South Sudan's leaders to reconcile between themselves so they are able to reconcile the South Sudanese people. He described the mood as good during last night's meeting.
They shook hands, they took pictures, and they took dinner together. And he asked the two leaders to bring a proposal of one case on how they can bring peace to South Sudan.
Video footage circulating on social media early this morning shows Prime Minister Abiy sandwiched between the two rivals after guiding them into an awkward group hug. Gatkwos says Abiy also appealed to the two leaders to bridge the gap between the two men on a personal level as well as between the government and the opposition.
They agreed that they will reconcile and leave behind their differences, and then they agreed that Kiir and Machar should give a proposal on how to bring peace in South Sudan.
Gatkwos says President Kiir and Machar agreed to present to Premier Abiy new proposals that will be the basis of future talks aimed at ending the nearly five-year-old conflict. He says Mr. Kiir, Machar and Prime Minister also agreed that talks between the various warring parties should resume in Addis Ababa under the auspices of IGAD. Gatkwos says Abiy promised to allow the parties more time to negotiate a peaceful end to the conflict. The Ethiopian premier promised to organize another meeting between President Kiir and Machar at an unspecified date. Gatkwos says Machar suggested mediators consider adopting a model that was used during previous talks that led to the signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, which ended the war between the Sudanese government and the SPLA rebels in 2005. Gatkwos says the model used by IGAD mediators with its various workshops is informative but unrealistic.
Dr. Riek also asked the Prime Minister that they must give leaders of South Sudan more time to discuss the outstanding issues and allow the South Sudanese dialogue to take place, asking to give South Sudanese more time to discuss these issues.
South Sudan in Focus was unable to get comments from South Sudanese government officials on the meeting. South Sudan's ambassador to Ethiopia, James Morgan Pitia, told this program twice that he was busy in meetings. In a separate but related development, IGAD convened a Council of Ministers meeting in Addis Ababa today following the Kiir Machar meeting. The Ethiopian Ministry of Foreign Affairs reported on its Twitter account that, quote, the 63rd extraordinary session of IGAD Council of Ministers meeting is underway. The Council would recommend the final bridging proposal to the Assembly to engage the parties to sign the revitalized agreement prepared based on the bridging proposal, end of quote. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon-Wudu in Juba.
A senior aid official in South Sudan is calling on President Kiir and Machar to restore peace now. Mercy Corps' country director for South Sudan says the two leaders have a chance to agree on an immediate truce and put in place the building blocks for long-term peace. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
Janardhan Rao is Mercy Corps' country director for South Sudan. He notes that women and children have borne the brunt of nearly five-year conflict.
Whenever and wherever there is war, it is the vulnerable and powerless who suffer the most. Women, men and children are uprooted and their lives destroyed. In South Sudan, tens of thousands of people have been killed and millions have been forced to flee, making it the source of Africa's largest refugee crisis. Resources are depleted and people are dying of hunger. Now, those with the power have a chance to agree an urgent and immediate truce.
Rao says he is optimistic that Machar and the president will restore peace in South Sudan. He says the endless talks among junior officials of the warring parties have failed to end the fighting.
Irrespective of all the efforts that have gone in, they have not led to a fruition. And that is where now everybody's hope is pinned on the two leaders now. The entire international community, the IGAD leaders, they're all now coming together. But more importantly for us on the ground, it is the communities which are all getting frustrated by the lack of peace, the stalemate that has been going on for 2 years, and people are suffering. The two leaders have the capability, they have the capacity to bring peace to the ground, and they are the only ones who can make it happen.
Rao says unless South Sudan's leaders restore peace across the country, all efforts by the NGOs and aid workers to try to help the millions of vulnerable people will go to waste.
Unfortunately, every time the resilience is built, certain conflicts are happening and people are getting displaced and everything is raised down to the ground. However much resilience we build, there is no way we can build resilience against conflict. Peace becomes like the bottom line of everything that is happening in this country. Peace is an absolute.
Rao says he also worries about the safety of humanitarian workers who at times have been targeted by various warring parties during the conflict. He says peace must be restored so humanitarian organizations can do their jobs in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
Some young South Sudanese are meeting in the Rwandan capital, Kigali, to plan how they will influence affairs of their country. Terma Young is attending the Kigali meeting. He says some young South Sudanese who represented political parties at previous talks in Addis Ababa are pushing the leaders of the warring parties to include young people in the country's transitional government. Manyang points out that 75% of South Sudan's population is young, so the future of the country arguably rests with the nation's young leaders.
These young people came from different institutions. This include the civil society group, the youth who have the political organization, and the religious leaders. The main purpose here, why we are here, we find that the young people, they have one thing in common. When the young people are working together, they will resolve and the ongoing crisis in South Sudan as a young people, and they will influence the political leaders, and also they will influence also the region.
What can motivate young people in South Sudan to work together?
When you look at the population of South Sudan, the 72% are the young people. The reason why they're coming together, they realize that there are some young people being brainwashed already by the politicians, and they wanted to change that mindset. Because when the young people say no, they can change the country. And these people, they have a power to influence and their political leaders.
It is easy to take people to Kigali or to Nairobi or to Kampala and meet for a week and come out with beautiful resolutions on paper. But implementing it is another thing. Is there an instance where young people have stood up and told the leaders of South Sudan that enough is enough, we need change?
This is the reason why we bring these young people together, and we realize that enough is enough, and these young people need to come together and need to influence the political parties together. That is why you can saw our communique yesterday. Our position paper, and yesterday we realized that we have one thing in common. okay? And one thing in common, we are young people. We knew that there are some young people who have been used by their leaders, and that's why we have been able to come together to sign that paper in order for us to advocate for the change in the country.
All you're asking is you want to sit at the table, at the negotiating table. I mean, there are already young people at the high-level revitalization forum. There is a youth representative. There are a lot of young people there, but you are still saying you want to be there.
The reason why we are here, young people have been left out, okay? Either they don't have any percentage in South Sudan, and whether they're in government, whether they're in opposition. These are the young people who need to... We need to be included in decision-making, whether in peace negotiation, whether if there's any future government to be formed in future. These people, they need to be included because we are the majority.
Why can't the young people be innovative and start their own businesses, start rebuilding the country through their initiative? Why should everybody be a government employee?
Yes, it is not like that, John. When we have already young people are working in the civil society group. We have already and the young people who are in the political parties. And the government is not the only place for the young people. What we want in the government is our percentage. If there any government to be formed in future, we demand for some percentage.
Why would you want to be given percentage? Why can't you go and contest and sell your policy to people and people elect you? Why would you want to be given?
And you know, John, we never had an election in a country where the young people can have their chances, okay, to be elected. Yes, I know these young people, they are already leaders. When you look at that election, John, to me, I don't see an election. When you look at the young people who want to contest in 2010, last time, if you don't have an army and people will intimidate you, that one is not an election. An election where we call election where you can move across the country. You can go to Equatoria, you can go to Apanal, you can go to Bargadal. Even for recent, and there are some candidates who just remain in the region last time. How can you call that one election? It is an election of intimidation.
That's Tara Manyang, Executive Director of the International Youth for Africa, a South Sudanese nonprofit based in Kampala. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Kigali, Rwanda, earlier today. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The European Union provides a big financial boost for the most needy in Sudan and South Sudan. Find out more when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today...
Tell me about something beautiful that moved you recently.
A cousin of mine gave birth after a long period of trying to have a baby. It took them about 6 years to have their first baby.
The most beautiful thing that moves me recently is the roads and also the lights and also the happiness of my family.
Oh yeah, I have a lot, but what I can say is education. I've just pursued my degree and it's really doing me well because I've already got a job that can help me and then improve my life.
Something that moved me recently is that I was given a responsibility to head a big project, first of its kind in my life. So it's something that was great.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The European Union has released 68 million euros to provide humanitarian assistance to vulnerable communities in Sudan and South Sudan. A top EU official in South Sudan says the 45 million euros allocated to South Sudan will be used to provide emergency food aid, health, nutrition, shelter, water, and sanitation. Michael Atit has this report for VOA from Juba.
In a press release issued this week, the European Commissioner for Humanitarian Aid and Crisis Management, Christos Stylianides, says The EU is stepping up its support because so many people in Sudan and South Sudan face massive humanitarian needs. Morten Petersen, who heads the EU's humanitarian office in South Sudan, says the funds will be used to provide vulnerable communities affected by the nearly 5 years of conflict with food and other basic necessities.
It includes big support to nutrition, both nutrition supplies for treatment and what we call frontline services, the NGOs that actually receives, identifies, find the children that are malnourished and treats them and get them back on their feet again. In addition to that, the last big component of our support goes to what we call emergency response.
Peterson says the conflicts had dramatically increased the number of people who need assistance. He says the EU aid will primarily go to internally displaced persons and host communities. The EU is committed to supporting affected communities, Peterson says, but he warns that continued fighting in parts of the country obstructs aid workers from accessing some of the most vulnerable people.
Needs have spread to basically everywhere in the country. And we adjusted our programming and our engagement with our partners. So our rapid response mechanisms are now able to respond to needs basically anywhere in the country. And if we are blocked for some time in central unity, we will always try and continue trying to work and get in and help the people.
Peterson notes that the environment in South Sudan remains harsh to aid workers, and he does not understand why the warring parties continue to attack unarmed aid workers who do not pick sides in the conflict.
It's difficult. It's dangerous. More than 100 aid workers has been actually killed in South Sudan in the line of duty since the start of the conflict in December 2013. There are frequent attacks, harassments, intimidation of aid workers, which hinders our access to the people in need.
Peterson says if South Sudan's leaders stop the fighting, there would be no internally displaced persons or refugees because they could safely return to their homes and produce food for their families.
If there is no fighting, if there is no insecurity, there is no need for humanitarian aid in the Equatorials. They are fully self-sufficient. They used to be the breadbasket of the country. There used to be an export of food from the Equatorials to other areas further north in South Sudan. That is unfortunately not the case now.
Peterson says the 23 million euros provided to the Sudanese government will be used to protect displaced communities, treat malnourished children in war-affected areas, and provide health and sanitation services. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
South Sudanese environmental activists at the Rhino Camp refugee settlement in Uganda's West Nile district of Arua say they hope to change attitudes of fellow refugees and discourage them from cutting down trees by promoting the use of a cheaper alternative to charcoal and fuel which is eco-friendly. The activists are introducing fellow refugees to an alternative form of energy in the settlement with support from the British charity Oxfam. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Arua, Uganda.
Environmental activists with the dynamic drama group use street theater and music to raise awareness on environmental conservation among refugees. Last month, their campaign received a boost after Oxfam donated machines for making briquettes. The machines use compressed blocks of charcoal dust, cow dung, or sawdust and turn the material into fuel for cooking. Oxfam trained the activists on how to use the machines and how to make energy-saving stoves which use the briquettes. Activist Victoria Nyoka says switching to briquettes means women would no longer have to spend hours searching for firewood and bringing it back to camp.
There was a moment we moved for a long distance. There was some other men who were chasing people out of the forest. They are like, we should not cut their trees, so it is very hard. We have seen that at least using the briquettes, it has reduced the issue of firewood.
Nyoka and other members of the drama group make their briquettes. The process uses heat to convert solid waste or biomass into an energy-burning material. A binding substance like starch is added so it can be molded into different shapes using a compacting machine. Group leader Martin Lokolo Justin says the end product is clean and fuel efficient.
Briquettes actually is more better than firewood, because with the firewood we use that ordinary way of having three stones where you light the firewood and you will see that the heat loss in that three stones is too much going out. But when we use the briquettes, at least we can use 60% of the heat.
Nyoka explains the briquettes are particularly convenient to refugees because they are cheap and once ignited can burn for several hours, enabling women to often use only one large briquette, which costs about 1,500 Ugandan shillings to prepare all the day's meals.
Because if you see the bigger one, we use it, it takes like 6 to 8 hours. And for us here, if you want to cook, like mostly here we do cook beans. So it is so good for us to use these ones, the bigger ones. It helps us so much.
Mawaja Rashid, Oxford's public health promotion team leader in Arua, says by promoting the use of these energy-saving stoves, the Dynamic Drama Group is not only helping refugees obtain cheap, clean and efficient fuel, but they are also cleaning up the environment because they collect solid waste left around their camp to make the briquettes. Rashid says the Dynamic Drama Group's efforts to encourage refugees to utilize forest resources in a sustainable manner convinced his organization to support the campaign.
We felt important that would build on what the group is doing with support on capacity building them on how to recycle solid waste into briquettes to substitute charcoal and fuel wood.
The group now produces more than 200 briquettes of various sizes per day, a figure they hope to increase gradually as they convince more people to embrace use of briquettes and energy-saving stoves. Rashid says Oxfam will help the drama group promote its products and also access financial services to boost their enterprise.
We are supporting them in creating linkages with possible markets for their energy saving stoves and the briquettes as well. But also we are supporting them in terms of routine technical support. We have also plans of linking them with financial institutions in future and see how are they able to borrow some money.
Arua district officials say a 2017 environmental impact assessment in refugee hosting areas found a refugee household uses up to 10 kilograms of firewood per day. Officials say this is decimating the local vegetation. Oxfam expects its support to refugee environmental activist groups such as the Dynamic Drama Group will significantly reduce the degradation of the area's forest resources by refugees. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
World Cup effect continues to unify the many fans who will fill Russia's stadiums and billions of viewers across the globe, many of whom are in Africa. As the best footballers in the world battle it out to be crowned champion, Zahir Kassim tells us how Africans have set aside their differences to support all the teams from the continent.
It is Saturday night at the bar, and South Africans have been treated to a special weekend with exciting rugby and soccer games taking place back-to-back. For rugby fans, the Springbok rugby jersey is a clear indication of who you support. But for soccer fans, it does not really matter what shirt you wear, as long as you are backing an African team.
So I'm supporting Nigeria because it's obvious, it's an African country, we need to boost them, you know. Let's go white and green.
Even though the South African soccer team failed to qualify for this year's World Cup, many fans of the game feel that any African win is a win for the continent. In recent years, South Africa has seen several xenophobic attacks on foreign communities. But events like the World Cup help people realize that they are part of a community, explains analyst Kelebogile Lipele from the Institute of Race Relations.
I think it's a lot to ask from just a game of match to, you know, to bring people together. But at the same time, we can look at it in the sense that a sporting event or the game itself is you know, requires a team. You know, it requires people to coordinate the event. It requires people to coordinate the, you know, for team players to communicate. So I would say proper communication from team members would be something that as people, as citizens, we look at, you know, depending on each other, realizing what each person plays, you know, in the team, the role that every member of the citizen plays.
Back at the bar, Nigeria struggles to put up much of an attack as they fall short against a talented Croatia team. But fans try to stay optimistic.
We're going to win the World Cup. Well, it'd be nice if an African was, like, team one, but yeah, I'll probably be Belgium, though.
One loss does not mean an exit yet, and with lots more soccer to come, there's still a chance an African team can win the World Cup or the continent. Sahir Kassim for VOA, Johannesburg, South Africa.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Bari by Freedom Boys. Listening to Freedom Boys with the song Bari. I'm Ayan Dang Bior in Washington. Thanks for being here. We'd like to hear what you think about the show. You can tell us on the web at southsudan@voanews.com or reach us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. We hope you join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I
Ninyambunya mesimu reiti kini balu anite kukumajikare.